U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
It is 12:12 here on 720 WGN. Welcome to Friday afternoon. Heck, let's say the weekend. Be glad you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this summer day. Steve Bertrand here in the WGN studios, high atop the Chicago River. Okay, you heard Tom Gimbel's voice there. Actually, burnout. Did you know occupational burnout is a term recognized by the World Health Organization? We'll talk to Tom about that. I suspect he will not be very sympathetic to that. So that's coming up. Also, I'm really interested in what's going on at Cooper's Hawk. That's a restaurant chain that's kind of been a friend of the show. They've been on a few times, and they were apparently acquired this week. So we'll talk to the folks at Crane's about that. But I want to start with Andrea Haines from the Chicago Tribune, because she's all about my personal privacy online. And, well, I thought of you this morning, Andrea. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
Okay, so I know we're going to talk about that face app sort of thing, but you tend to be a little more concerned about online privacy and things like that, and you know, you tend to ridicule me because I don't mind so much, right?
That's pretty much true. I would say that's accurate.
Yeah, and I really don't, I do not want to believe in this idea of devices listening in or this kind of nefarious stuff. I just am not a conspiracy theory guy. So, you know, maybe sometimes I go too far to defend them or to resist that stuff. We had some contractors over, in fact, from Cobblestone were over last night at our house looking at the back of our house, and we might get some work done. And one of the things that came up was maybe replacing the gutters and putting screens on the gutters, right? That makes sense. We have an Echo Dot in our on our back deck.
Uh-oh.
This morning, and you know, sometimes these are coincidental, you can try to figure it out. This morning, Sharon, my wife, said she went on her Instagram feed, and there was an ad for gutter screens.
Wow.
I know, because she certainly has not been searching for gutter screens or gutters. I might have been, but she hasn't been, and she hadn't seen the ad before. So it's kind of, I mean, is that that's the sort of freaky thing that you're worried about, and maybe I should be too?
Interesting. Yeah, well, you know, these topics come up about once every week or two, right, where there's some kind of privacy situation, and you and I duke it out over how big of a deal is it really.
Right.
And, you know, I guess from my perspective, I just feel like a lot of these companies, especially if they're offering you something for free, you have to be cognizant of the fact that they're not making money off of you that way. They may be making money off of you some other way that you aren't thinking about.
And this comes
so
up. This has come
I
up
want
with
people to keep that in mind,
right? And this has come up with Google before, and they insist that they're not listening in. Or I guess there were stories where they were listening sometimes for editing purposes or software enhancements, things like that. But I don't know. That just it was the clearest example in my life so far that it might have been a little hinky.
Big companies, you know, that's one thing. But then you also have these little ones, like as happened this week with Face App that everybody was playing with. Sometimes it is a little company. You know, we may all have already figured out our opinions about the Googles and Amazons and Facebook, and we may be okay with them because of the value they provide in our lives, depending on our individual feelings. But then some of these seem to come out of nowhere, and everyone just quickly turns over all their data. And then 24 hours later, they're like, wait, what did I just do here?
I would never do that. I would never jump in and ask questions later. That would be irresponsible. Do you want to see the picture of me? I got the picture of me as an old man. I'll send it to you.
Did you do it?
Of course I did. I did it in an instant. And you did not, right?
I did not. Why do I want to see myself as an older person? I mean, I can just guess well enough. The mirror is doing a perfectly good job of that for me.
Well, it's funny. I look exactly like my dad. I mean, I it could almost be my dad in the picture. So I did it. And you know what? I did it because I read it on CNBC's website. I mean, so there was that sort of factor of legitimacy involved. And then I read that there's a Russian company behind it. But here's the thing I thought about when I saw this, Andrea, was I tried to put myself into a classic painting with that software from a couple of years ago. Remember, you could take a picture of yourself and they would say, what sort of painting do you look like you belong in? And
yes.
I had to go to Ohio to do it. You couldn't do it in Illinois because of their face recognition laws. So I was kind of surprised we could do this with the Face App. And what's the difference?
Yeah, same here. You know, Illinois has these very strict biometric laws, and those protect us in certain ways that are a little more serious. And it also has maybe inconvenience people who want to play with this kind of sort of toy, effectively, of some of these fun, you know, apps. It really doesn't let people in Illinois often upload their faces or do some of those things because it would wind up in violation of this law. But in this particular case, the way that FaceApp was working, according to Ali Marotti, a tech reporter here, she talked to a company, that, a law firm that's actually watched this stuff pretty closely, and they said this one was actually okay, it appeared to them, and so it was actually working in Illinois.
Okay, so so there's that. So go look, see what you would look like. I also did it as what I looked like as a younger man. I was much better looking online than I was in real life, I will say that.
Oh, really funny. It did seem like the pictures were fun. I get why people, you know, it becomes a social thing. Your friends are doing it. You want to do it. I think it's just like maybe look a little bit. And it's not only individuals that have to act. It's like the privacy policies themselves. Even if you try to read them, honestly, are you really going to understand it? So we maybe need some ways policy-wise to just make this more understandable to people who want to be a little more diligent.
I'm a little embarrassed because World Emoji Day was Wednesday and I did not celebrate it. I missed it.
Oh, you missed it. Oh, that's sad. Do you use emoji on a regular basis?
Absolutely not. If I use an emoji, it's an accident. It's a slip of the thumb.
But that's funny. Well, I'm a big fan, so I'm happy to see what some of these new ones are. You know, every year they release new ones, and everyone who does use them eagerly awaits knowing what is coming. And Apple has a bunch of new ones out, and a lot of them center around diversity.
I love that. So you've got different skin tone, different genders, and they're the ones holding hands, right? There now are, this is some math. I don't quite understand this, but there are now 75 different possible combinations for two people holding hands?
Yes. So this allows you to be, you know, a white woman with brown hair with a black man, or a black woman with a, you know, lighter brown man, or all those different combinations of the colors that they offer. You can now do that and mix and match the couples.
So,
a few new combinations.
They announced it this week, but it won't be up and running on your iPhone until later in the year, right?
Exactly. This will be available in the fall. And then Google is also introducing emoji for Android, and those will also be coming later this year.
Andrea Haynes from the Chicago Tribune. Listen, thanks for stopping by. Have a great weekend. Stay cool, will you?
Sure thing, Steve. You too.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, how are you feeling in the office? So maybe you're suffering from burnout. I've got a document here from the World Health Organization. It says, quote, burnout is a syndrome conceptualized as resulting from chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. One of the creators of workplace stress is in the studio now.
Well played.
Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network. I said when I was setting this up at the top of the show that you were going to say this was a bunch of hooey.
Yeah. Well I guess if stress causes it, then I guess every parent burns out. What do they do?
But you must be there. I mean, there must be something to that, right?
There's different levels of stress, and everybody's got different bandwidths for how much stress they can handle.
Right.
And I worked with a guy who used to run the merchandise mart, all the conferences, conventions, everything. And he said, he was an older gentleman at the time, he's probably in his mid-60s, and he goes, someone said to me, I said, how are you doing today? And she goes, I'm a little tired. And he goes, come in my office. He goes, it's 9 o'clock on a Monday. He goes, when you work 62 days straight, including weekends, 12 hours a day, then you can say you're tired.
No.
Now, this was 1999.
Okay.
It was a different world. However.
Oh, I think I saw him. Was he in 9 to 5?
He may have been. But I think conceptually, burnout from an 8 to 5 job isn't really burnout.
Right.
And if you're working 60 hours a week and you're doing it continuously for years, you can have burnout. But to say you're tired isn't the same as burning out.
The characteristics of occupational burnout include feelings of energy depletion or exhaustion, increased mental distance from one's job, of feelings of negativism or cynicism related to the job, and reduced professional efficacy. Now, I will say this. I don't know about occupational burnout, but I do think there can sometimes be sort of a sense of malaise that sets in, which is a little more controllable.
Yeah, it's controllable. And I think all kidding aside, it's like the 7-year itch in marriage. When you do the same thing at the same place with the same person for a continual period of time, you get malaise.
Right.
And the question is, how do you re-engage?
Not in my case, but right. Yeah.
Of course not in yours. Right. How do you re-engage?
This is what we talk about
all the time.
Yeah,
and it's not. And the difference between a marriage or a relationship is there's just two people. In a work environment, you usually have more. So how do you engage with your coworkers? How do you engage with management? How do you engage with your clients in a different way to re-engage?
I mean, you just can fall into such a rut where, you know, day after day you're doing... I mean, my job is different every day in so many ways.
Right.
But in many other ways, it's exactly the same. I mean, they have my coffee for me downstairs at 11:10
every day. They know exactly what
every
you want,
day.
Right?
That's when I'm there.
But there are professional athletes that don't want to go to batting practice. They don't want to shoot jumpers. I mean, every job has the rote factor to it.
Right.
And it's up to each individual. The people who are the most successful are the ones that engage and get excited by what it is.
I was going to say, so is this a manager's issue or an employee's issue?
It's both.
Yeah?
It's both. I think too often managers want to blame an employee and say, you know, Bennett's terrible, but Steve's great, so Bennett's the problem.
That is not something anyone has ever said.
And so, but the answer is really, we can always default to the great person and say, why isn't everybody like that? The role of a manager is to help the people that need it.
Right.
Anybody can manage, you know, relatively speaking, can coach Michael Jordan, but how do you get the most out of the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th best player?
So anyone could manage a Bennett Wakenight, but it's more difficult to manage a Steve Bertrand.
I mean, only ego-wise.
Right. And it's Steve's job to not get, you know, suffer from the malaise.
You've got to realize that you've got a good thing, too. And I think too often people, the grass isn't always greener. And in this economy, that's really hard. Hey, I'm a little bit bored. And maybe I'll take that call. And maybe I'll take the job for $10,000 more and I'll be challenged.
Right.
Until a year later and you feel the exact same thing.
Tom Gimbel is the CEO of LaSalle Network and he is the chief malaise fighter.
Thank you.
For the city of Chicago. Thanks for coming by.
You've called me worse things. I appreciate it.
I will as soon as you leave again. Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Philip Weiss is in the studio. Welcome back, Philip. Nice to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
WorkRight Solutions, president of, and Philip, his job is to advise other companies and businesses about how to stay out of trouble. And usually what he does is he watches and sees what the president says, and then he tells those businesses not to say those things.
Right, or many other people. We're all subject to those same foibles.
But
In some sense.
This one comes from the go back to or things like that. I don't know if you saw, but Pierre Trudeau today was very critical, along with the president of the EU, saying he was there to talk trade, but values are more important than trade, and then really took on. But so that's government, or that's politics, that then filters down to the workplace. And we saw it in the suburbs this week, right? There was a clerk at a gas station in Naperville. The word was today just got fired because he essentially told a group of Hispanic people to go back where they came from.
Yeah, well, that is a mirror image of what we're seeing all over the place, which is something is stated in a political environment, campaign trail, the political sphere. It's more likely now than ever to transfer over into corporate America. And we've gotten all these calls in the last few days, even before the Naperville incident that you allude to, HR people saying, we're worried because we don't want people making assumptions about others' national origin or potentially offending them. And then we've got this event of the last 24 hours.
So is this a deal? Does this come up in the workplace a lot?
It does. And clearly, we're not looking at situations where people obviously and egregiously offend each other or insult their national origin or ancestry directly. But it's the same notion of having assumptions about where someone might be from, where they were born, what that means about them that really plagues people at work.
I think it really reveals an ignorance. And I mean that by not a stupidity or dumbness, but an ignorance. Like you told the story of a woman who was hired by a catering company, right, who was Asian?
Yeah, and that's a great example. It's a catering company where you would think they would know food, they would know cuisine,
right,
and they would know how to ask an applicant about their experience vis-a-vis different types of cuisine. This is a fairly new hiring manager that got in the hot water, or maybe the soup or the stew, since it's a cooking-related story.
Is it egg drop soup, maybe?
That could have been part of the story, actually, right. Because what he did, Steve, is he saw an applicant come in who, to him, looked Asian or Asian-American, and he immediately jumped to the conclusion that she must be an expert in Pan-Asian cuisine, and said to her, I'm so glad we got someone who really probably knows their way around an egg roll, sushi, kimchi, confusing several.
All of Asia.
Right. And egg rolls, by the way, are an American invention anyway, so way off base, but perhaps more serious. This applicant had never been to Asia. knew nothing about Asian cuisine, was a transplant from Memphis, Tennessee, and was a real expert on barbecue. That was her expertise. So either it's ignorance or just lack of preparation.
So then what happens? Did the woman complain, or how do we know
this
story?
She didn't, you know, that's a really good question, because internal complaints are a risk. We've had people who've written to the CEO
right.
in groups to complain about how they were, what the assumptions were made about them. In this case, the woman actually took to a local online chat room and described her experience.
Which is more dangerous, I would think.
Frankly, the company was lucky it didn't go viral nationally, but they ended up dealing with local protests and had to engage in weeks of damage control.
Okay, so, you know, this is Chicago, where Milton Rakoff wrote the book, We Don't Want Nobody, Nobody Sent, right? We want to know where people are from.
Yeah.
We just kind of do. But if you're hiring someone, is it ever relevant? Should you never ask, or what do you do?
Well, you know, I think you've asked the core question. It's never relevant because it never really ensures you know anything about their skills, experience, or qualification. So if you want to know if someone can speak a certain language, because that's essential to make them successful in terms of who they'll be dealing with, that's a fair question. If you want to know if they've dealt with international teams, for example, because you're expanding or you're bringing in resources from other countries, that's a relevant question. But to assume that you need to know about where they were born or their grandmother was
right.
born is not necessarily part of the equation.
Okay, but one of the examples you sent over to me was a Hispanic guy in the medical sales, right? And he the boss has passed over many other more qualified people to give him a route in an Hispanic area.
Right, because the assumption was, to your question, Steve, this guy has a name that I think is Hispanic, looks Hispanic to me, therefore absolutely must speak Spanish.
Does he speak Hispanic?
He spoke no Spanish, which was part of the complaint that was forwarded to the CEO by several individuals who spoke Spanish, came from all different countries, and really should have been next in line for that position.
Okay, so let me ask you this then. It is... If you have a public face of your business, and in this case it's this salesman, and you are going to an area where there are a lot of people who look like this salesman, is that a reason to hire him?
Yeah, that's dodgy, if not dangerous.
Okay.
In the sense that we're supposed to always assign the most qualified person. And the reality is that the most qualified person might happen to have some similarities, kinship, cultural connections to the people he or she is serving. But really the goal is, the expectation is, and what the courts have said is, you look for qualifications, skills, and experience. And, you know, to your point about just wanting to know about people.
Right. It's kind of what we do.
There are ways to do that. Even employee to employee, where frankly the legal risk is not the first thing that pops in our head. We're not going to sue each other
right.
for saying, where are you from? When we've surveyed employees anonymously, they want that conversation maybe not to happen the first moment you meet someone. Establish some rapport. So even at the employee level, Steve, there's this sensitivity, like, why is that what you want to know about me first?
Is that more among minorities than it is among white people? I'm sure it probably is.
It's interesting. It really depends on where you go and who you ask. We have actually surveyed employees of all different demographics and found that people who are more aware, or maybe they've got a relative representing another group, or maybe they have an experience where they were treated differently, they're actually also more sensitive, concerned, or have that enlightened view of, this is not the best way to start my relationship.
Philip Weiss is the president of WorkRight Solutions. Thanks for coming by.
Pleasure to
see you. And I'm not going to ask where you're from.
Well, I'm from...
Would you tell me?
You know, I'm from the world of lawyers.
You're so woke, Philip.
Yeah, well, the world of lawyers is not terribly woke always.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Have you ever bought a t-shirt for $495? $495?
Guys, yeah, he fainted. Someone get some water.
Well, if you've never shopped at Barney's in the Gold Coast, that's the kind of price range you're working with. But at the luxury department store, times are tough as consumer habits change, and it sounds as though they're working hard to negotiate leases and other expenses that come with running the company. The Gold Coast location's at Rush and Oak, and it takes up an entire city corner. So if the department store finds itself in bankruptcy trouble, finding someone to fill that spot would be quite difficult. And speaking of utilizing space, a number of suburban headquarters will finally be empty as many of the transitions to downtown office spaces begin with Mondelez, Walgreens, Takeda, and among some of the most notable. Lake County is being hit hard with this, and the big question will be, what will go in there next? Find a new company, tear it down and build a park, make mixed real estate options? As the kids say, TBD. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
All righty. Thank you, Orion Samuelson, Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WG. And if you've listened to the show over the years, you know, one of the guests I've had on a few times has been Tim McHenry from Cooper's Hawk, the guy who came up with it. Just a great success story, Cooper's Hawk. And I guess it depends on how you look at this, but today maybe it became the ultimate success story. Joining us from Crane Chicago Business in the newsroom there is Dalton Barker, who writes about food and consumer products for Cranes. Dalton, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Hi, Steve. How are you today?
I'm well, thanks. But, you know, I was kind of floored by this story. Cooper's Hawk, I'll let you tell the story of them, but kind of a remarkable story in what they've been able to build over the past several years. They just cashed in big time, didn't they?
Absolutely. I mean, they started out in Orland Park in 2005, and, you know, over the last 14 so years, you know, they've really grown a pretty large company. They did around $280 million in sales last year at 35 different locations, and I believe around 10 states, and that was up 17% from the previous year. And anytime you're talking about 15%+ in the restaurant business right. growth, I mean, that's pretty impressive.
And so is it pronounced Aris Management?
That's correct, yeah. They're a private equity firm based out of Los Angeles, and so they purchased the company for $700 million, which is roughly a multiple of over 17 times earnings, which is very similar to like a Panera Bread or a Popeye. So some pretty weighty company for them.
You know, and I've done a couple of events with Tim, and I kind of thought, but I reached out to him today, but clearly he hasn't reached back. I understand that. But, you know, I kind of thought this was a labor of love with these guys. I didn't know they were building something to eventually sell it. Do you think that's what happened here, or did they just get offered with or get presented with an offer they can't refuse?
You know, it's kind of hard to tell because obviously we haven't gotten a comment from either party yet. But, you know, sometimes I think that you've grown to such a large degree, is that maybe you're looking at other ventures or
right.
You know, maybe they're trying to expand into larger markets and they need some more capital. It's hard to tell right now, but like you said, I mean, they've grown this to a wine club alone of over 350,000 members.
I mean, they make their own wine. They make it, I think it's in Woodridge, and they just opened a new winery not too long ago, a year or two ago. So they've been able to establish themselves in a very competitive industry by creating this wine club, by making their wine here. They do travel. I used to talk to them about doing some travel trips together. So they've created their own sort of niche, which I guess would make them attractive.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I know that when they joined in, a big comment that he had was, as Tim said, that you go to a lot of these wineries, but you couldn't get food.
Right.
And now he's been able to combine both, you know, good food and wine and create also this environment of cohesion and community around the wine club. And it's clearly been a big success for him.
We talk about startups and exits a lot on this show. This was a great Chicago startup. It turned out to be more than that. But, wow, a heck of an exit, too.
Yeah. Absolutely. $700 million. Nothing to blink at.
Right. That's more than just a snifter. Dalton Barker writes about food and consumer products for Cranes. Dalton, great talking to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely, Steve.